Yes, it is that time of the week, a Fransky Friday on the Midday Show. Scott Fransky, of course, sponsored by Morgan & Morgan, America's largest injury law firm, as the Phillies have a rare, very rare Friday day off. I think the last time we had one of these was probably the day after opening day when they built in that Friday off day in case of weather. We have one today, though, so a Friday off day leading into the rest of the series against the New York Mets. Scott Fransky joins us right here on the Midday Show. Scott, how are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you guys? Yeah, we got like 3 out of 5 Fridays off coming up.
Yeah, so what are you going to do today since you got Friday off?
We have a pool party.
Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah, you will come by?
You know what? I don't like getting in the water, Scott. I ain't going to lie. I don't like being in the water.
Could be wolf eels in there.
It's all 11 to 12-year-olds. It probably wouldn't be seen.
There might be sharks in the water. I just saw they had a video
sharks
of some
in Scott's
sharks.
Pool.
I'm just saying. I ain't know. You know, you said pool party. You know? I don't know.
Well, Scott, a nice Friday pool party sounds great. And the Phillies getting back on track this weekend would be great, too. Scott, it's been an interesting week here. And obviously, the biggest news off of the end of last week is losing Adolis Garcia, which opens up right field now. And it feels like the Phillies have some short-term options. And Gabriel Rincones hit his first home run on Monday night. But it does feel like a spot that they're going to have to attack here probably by the trade deadline to get a fill-in.
I would guess they're talking, they're trying, you know, they're seeing what's out there. It's a shame because I do think obviously he was great defensively, did a lot for them defensively. And there was still some upside there. I don't know if he would have really fully tapped into it, but we were starting to see it. It's a shame because that might have been a bat that you wouldn't have had to go out and, you know, get, so to speak, if he could have tapped into some of that upside. But, yeah, I think they're going to have to look for that. I think they're obviously probably looking for another starter, some starting depth. And I wouldn't be shocked if they're looking for left-handed relief help, too.
You know, speaking of that, because we saw Andrew Painter going down and then Aaron Nola having his troubles yesterday, how concerned should we be about Aaron Nola and him basically, you know, trying to bounce back from the start he had yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, Nola was okay yesterday. He certainly kept you in the game. He's not one of your top three at this point. He's your fourth starter. It's pretty clear. You discard the money and the years and all that, all the pedigree and all that. It's clear that he's the fourth starter. So, he kept him in the game. Unlike the day before when it was, you know, Andrew was just overwhelmed and, those are the days you can't keep going with stuff like that. So I think they had to make that change. But, I don't know what they're going to do on Tuesday. I guess they have some, you know, some options. Could be Bryce Wilson, could be Alan Ronhell down at AAA. I don't know. None of them are going to jump off the page, but they need something that's a little more competitive every fifth day. I think Matt Gelb had it. Joe, I don't know if you read it. The difference between those two start Painter and Walker starts versus everybody else, it's crazy. The win run differential, the win loss record, it's off the charts bad. So they need just somebody who's serviceable in that spot.
Yeah, I did see that. And it does, you know, because you still look at it, Scott, the standings, and the Phillies have, I think it's the worst run differential in the division, even though we've watched them play and win at a very high clip, right, since the managerial change just really got back. I think most nights we don't feel that. We don't think, you know, that they play like that, but that's the numbers, and that kind of explains it in a significant way. Scott, when it comes to Painter, when you were watching him this year, what did you think was the biggest issue? I mean, obviously the results were not good to the point where they had no choice but to send him back down and try to help him out here. But to me, it's not so much a stuff thing. I mean, he still throws hard and he's got the break and stuff can go. It just felt like a combination of his fastball, they were on it and it wasn't moving enough and he was getting rocked on it. And two, I felt the last few starts, maybe his confidence really started to go the other way on him.
I mean, I don't know how it couldn't. Honestly, as a human being and as a young player, first time in the league, I don't know how it couldn't have gone south on him. Pardon me. The fastball was obviously a problem, and he started running from it early. He would try, but he would run from it, and then it's sweepers and sliders and splits, and you know there were some moments there where you felt like maybe he's doing something. I just think he needs some mechanical changes. I think And I'm no expert on pitching, but everybody who's watched him, all these ex-pitchers that watch him that we talk to, and they're like, yeah, he's got to get down the mound a little better. He's got to extend. He's got to get on top of the hitter. He's got to get down the slope of the mound. He's 6'7", and he doesn't even tap into his lower half, really, the way that I think a lot of people think that he could. I don't know why that is or what, if there's something that's more comfortable for him doing it a different way. I just think there have been moments recently. They've tried to get him in bullpens to be more aggressive, get down the mound, stop being so rotational, yet towards the catcher. And there would be those flashes where that it looks like he's doing it. And then all of a sudden he's, you know, spin, you know, off speed, spin. And you're like, what, where'd the fastball go? We have to pitch off that. And I just think he can't do it up here. The changes he has to make, he can't do it up here. There's too much pressure. There's too much at stake. He's got to be able to do it in the minor leagues. And, he's not the first kid to go back, right? A lot of kids do. And I would assume he'll be back and give it another go at some point. Maybe this, maybe not too long from now. Maybe not this year. I don't know.
Yeah, he's not the first. He won't be the last. That's for sure. And I still think there's something there. It's a matter of, how long until they can find that and he earns it back here. Scott Fransky with us on a Fransky Friday. Scott, we got a peek at the lineup a couple days ago without Trey Turner when he was out nursing the, after he got hit by the pitch the first time this week. I hit twice this week. But it had Marsh, it had Schwarber, it had Harper. It was fun to see. Obviously, those guys have been their three best this season in terms of offensively. But then Trey got back in the other day, and Don Mattingly put him right back at the top. What did you think of the lineup the other night when it was those three lefties and they kind of ambushed the righty? And as time goes on, do you think we could see that again if Trey doesn't get going and those top three lefty hitters continue to hit?
Yeah, we could see it again. It will be somewhat matchup dependent. Obviously, I think there needs to be a right-handed pitcher on the mound. I think if there's a right-handed pitcher on the mound, Don Mattingly is far more willing to go to it. If there's not a lot of lefties in the pen, he's far more willing to go to it. I actually advocated for Marsh to be the leadoff man with Turner hitting second, Harper hitting third, and Schwarber hitting fourth. Marsh is doing things right now that I think are great, and I think, to me, it profiles well the way he's hitting. If Trey was competing for the batting title again, I wouldn't say it. I would leave Trey there, but he's not, and I would be fine if they went Marsh, Schwarber, Harper, or Marsh, Harper, Schwarber, whatever you want to do, but put those three guys at the top. I'm fine with it. Schwarber for sure, and Marsh and Harper to an extent are not your typical left on left guys. They're a little better. Schwarber certainly is. Marsh has improved. Harper's been, held his own over the years. So I wouldn't be super worried about a bunch of matchups, but if Trey doesn't get it going, I think they have to consider doing it more. I still think Don Mattingly said this week, we are our best selves if Trey Turner is going well. And that's obviously true. And if they want to get where they're going, where they want to go, Trey needs to get it going. And Trey is best served at the top of the lineup because of all the other things he does, right? And, steal bases, go first to third, score from first on a double, these kinds of things. That's important. And the Phillies are going to be their best if he comes, figures it out and is at the top of the order somewhere. But if he doesn't, they got to make other options. And I think Marsh is a decent option.
Scott, how do you view the hierarchy of the bullpen right now with Brad Keller on the injury list? Now, Brad wasn't pitching well. He has not, pitched this year the way he did last year with the Cubs. But still, he had been their eighth inning guy. And it seemed like a couple weeks ago when we talked about this and Don Mattingly talked about it, he was a little hesitant to just move Kirkering there. Well, now they're without Keller for a while. Alvarado has struggled. Banks now back to AAA. The more I watch this, the more I'm wondering how long until Jonathan Bolin becomes the next guy that we talk about. Because I've been mostly impressed, Scott, with Bolin and what they've gotten out of him, you know, bringing him in this year. How do you view that hierarchy to get to Duran? And do you think Bolin starts to become more of a guy they trust in big spots?
Well, right now, you don't have any choice. You have to give him an opportunity to do it. Him and Tim Mesa both, I think, are going to end up getting a little more leverage in the seventh inning or whatever. Because Kirkering's got to go to the eighth now with Keller out. I mean, you know, obviously there's some matchup dependency there, but Kirkering is better against left, has been better in his career, and is better now against left-handed hitters than Jonathan Bolin. Bolin's trying to figure it out. He's trying to work on this changeup. He's made some adjustments to it. He's throwing it a lot more this year. Been a pitch that's given him problems throughout his career, and that's why lefties have given him problems. But this year, he's starting to come with that changeup. We saw him hit 100 the other night. I didn't realize this. He's never hit 100 before, and he was doing it down at the knees. I mean, it was pretty sick stuff. And if a left-hand hitter is thinking, oh, he's going to flash that changeup at me, and then he's going to throw 100, well, I'm with you, Joe. I think he gets more leverage spots. But I think for now it's probably seventh inning, he and Mesa, depending on matchups, Kirkering to the eighth, Duran obviously the ninth. But because Alvarado, it's been a struggle for him. It's been a real struggle. And this is not just this year. It's a couple of years now where lefties have really started to track him pretty well. So there's something going on there. Lefties didn't used to hit him like that. There's something going on now. I don't know what it is, but they're seeing him pretty good. And they're hitting over 400 against him, and that just can't be.
No, I can't. Not in those leverage moments like last night. Scott,
right.
It's too much. And I think it hits per nine. It's like over 12. It's just way too many, you know, balls in play and hits. Scott, yeah. We appreciate it as always. Enjoy a rare Friday off, a few of these, and have fun at the pool party.
Yeah, have fun, man.
All right. Pew, let me know.
I'll let you know.
Watch out for the sharks.
There he goes. Scott Fransky with us every Friday. When was the last time you went to a pool party? It's been a while for me.
A pool party?
Yeah, like, we don't have a pool, so we don't have pool parties.
Wait, I mean, a minute.
We have the scoop.
Well, that's true. And like my kids go to pool parties. Like other people in the neighborhood have pools, but like
people pee in the pool, so I ain't really trying.
That's true.
People be peeing it. I ain't trying to go.
Didn't
to
we
pool
put up parties. A poll one day and it was like 50-50? Do you pee in the pool?
I think it was like a be honest.
It was an alarming number of people that said yeah.
Yeah, people pee in the pool, man. I'm not.
You think adults really do that?
Yes. Yeah, because they're too lazy to go, especially if they're drinking.
Okay,
too lazy to go.
Here's my question. So if it's your own pool, that's one thing, right? Then that's your decision and it's your own pool, and the people who live with got to deal with that. But do you think adults would actually do it at a pool party?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's gross. There could be like 20
especially if you're
people.
Drinking, yeah, dude. You don't want to get out of the pool.
Yeah, you've been drinking already wet.
Yeah, but if you're a guy, you just go in the corner behind the shed. You don't even have to go inside to pee.
You know, yeah, but people do that. People
yeah, you'd be. Nasty. I mean, you'd be surprised. I'd say you'd be surprised, but you might not. So I think I heard Olivia Rodrigo like mention that she could smell the grown men in diapers that were in the front row at her concert.
Oh, God.
Oh, wow.
So, like, yeah, people do that.
Well, I mean, diapers is a whole nother. Well, but, ball of wax.
So think to yourself, if there are men that are going to be wearing diapers to go to the front row of an Olivia Rodrigo concert, there's probably some overlap with urinating in the pool.
There might be. I would imagine, though, diapers is a separate issue. That's like a medical condition. To me, the peeing in the pool is just laziness. I mean, that's just like,
but don't they put charcoal in the diapers so that you can't really smell the pee?
Charcoal?
Well, because it's
like
it's
black.
It's, well, no, it's called charcoal, but it's supposed to like they do in a
toothpaste.
No, in a
there's charcoal toothpaste.
The cat, what's it called when the cats do when they go
litter box.
Yeah, I think they put charcoal in it to try to in the diaper to keep it from smelling.
That would make sense. Yeah, I mean, you don't mean like charcoal you grill with.
No, I think it's called charcoal, but it's the absorbing and it's supposed to block the smell or something.
Well, I hope I don't ever have to know about this, but if I do, I appreciate everyone for the help on the information here.
You guys are aging.
Yeah, well, upper room. We're not that close.
Wait a minute,
yet.
I just Googled it. Let me see.
Okay, what do we got?
Yes, activated charcoal or bamboo charcoal is used in adult diapers. It is typically incorporated into washable clothes, inserts, with specialized disposable products to control odors, manage moisture, and fight bacteria.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
It makes, I didn't never heard of it, but it, I mean, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
All right, 215-592-9494. Let's go to Jeff in Wilmington. I feel like he's a good caller for this part of the show. Jeff, what's up, pal?
Hugh, I'm glad you're still with us.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Hey.
We're all good. Hey. We're all good, Jeff. What's up?
All right. Man. All right, a couple things. Philly's last. Mm-hmm. This thing about the Jalen Hurts, I'm more in line with you on this because – Joe, you were jumping in and out of the stats matter thing. Like, I don't understand. I sort of understand where you're coming from because, on one hand, the Super Bowl loss, Jalen played great.
Right.
And there's been games where the other one that they won, he also played great.
Mm-hmm.
But the defense was awesome. I just know that for this team, he's the best guy because sometimes a quarterback just has to not lose the game. And sometimes he's got to step up and win it. And he's done that both ways quite a few times.
Yeah, and I think
– I don't think the stats for the quarterback is – I'm more aligned with Kyle on that, where it's not as black and white as people might think it is.
Yeah, well, so I agree with Kyle on that. I think – I guess for me, the way I would frame it is I just feel like we go too far with any of these guys, not just Jalen, with the wins and losses kind of guiding the whole thing of how we talk about it. And that's why I brought up if Jalen played great this season, and for some reason, you know, they had a rash of injuries on defense, and they went 7-10. But every week I came in here every Monday and said, I think Jalen played well. Then, like, I feel like I'd be a hypocrite when the season ended and we're having a discussion on should they keep him, and I say no because they went 7-10. You know what I mean? Like, I would base my thought on how he played. Just like I will the other way, right? If they go 12-5, but he doesn't play well, then I won't necessarily just say, well, I want him back. You know, like that. I just think we get too caught up in it when I've seen so many seasons where quarterbacks play well and their team loses, or they play not so great and their team wins. I think it's we've gotten to a crazy point with it, but I get your point. I get Hugh's point.
The example I'll use is there's a lot of Cincinnati Bengals fans that love Joe Burrow,
mm-hmm.
but they know by the end of the season there's a pretty good chance that team's going nowhere.
Yep.
So I would rather have Jalen and this team and this organization over a guy that fills up the stat sheet constantly but is constantly getting his ass beat on the field because the ownership doesn't want to pay for a defense.
Oh, of course. I mean,
does that
right.
make sense?
Yes. Jeff,
I'm totally
I think we'd all
Jalen.
Agree.
He,
yeah.
He's the guy.
I think we'd all agree. The Eagles situation is way better than the Bengals, like with Jalen included.
Quick.
Yeah,
yes.
Of course.
On the Phillies, mm-hmm. they're really in a tough spot because we got two of our top prospects that are not doing well, and I'll put Painter in as a prospect because he's back in the minors.
Mm-hmm.
Him and Aiden Miller are both – they're not tradable right now. So hopefully by the trade deadline, maybe they will be, but I would trade any prospect, to be honest with you, to get another starter or a big bat. That's the thing. It's not – we need both. So it's kind of like pick your poison. What do we want?
Well, we do need both.
But we don't have much leverage.
And now we don't. And it makes it hard because they have 6 weeks to decide what they need the most of and what they're going to put their eggs in which basket. Jeff, what do you got for his Father's Day gift, either a bad one you've gotten or a funny one you could give?
Well, the bad one is always like some type of clothing because I have a January birthday and Christmas time, it's all the same to me.
Right.
I always get the crappy gift like a scarf or a pair of socks. My brother and sister were born in the summer. They got all the cool stuff.
Oh, wow.
So I will say this. The coolest Father's Day gift I got was a autographed collage picture of Steve Carlton, Mike Schmidt, Pete Rose.
Oh, wow.
That's
got
pretty
that
cool.
That's a great one. Yeah, that's
it. It is. Yeah,
I don't care about your best gift.
That's
we wanted a bad one.
Jeff, well, he said socks. Jeff, good phone call. We appreciate it. Yeah, no one wants socks until you run out of socks and you wish you had more socks.
See, I don't wear socks, so it don't make no difference.
I think, well, huh?
I don't wear socks.
At all?
Nah.
Do you get blisters?
I only wear socks when I'm wearing galoshes. Like, I got to wear them with galoshes.
Huh.
But no, outside of that, no.
Do you own socks?
I have a pair. Yeah. I have, like, three or four pairs.
How could you not?
Yeah, well, I got it. Like, if I wear galoshes. But, like, normally socks is not,
that's
like.
Amazing.
No, wow. Socks is not, like, some
of them. You know, I probably have, I don't know, 40 pairs of socks.
Oh, and dude, how many have you lost? How many single pairs
do
you have?
I lose a pair every time I do laundry.
Yeah,
or
crazy.
I lose a match for one every single time. Every time.
I also have had a lot with, the dogs over the years. They get them, and then there's a little slight hole in them, right, because they chew them up. So then, you need new socks. Wow. Imagine life with only three or four pairs of socks.
It's not bad. I don't mind wearing socks.
Now,
I don't like wearing them now.
Were you always like this, or did you get liberated from socks?
I think I got older. You know what? You know what? I remember I played with Mo Lewis. Mo Lewis never wore socks. He would cut his socks out to let his toes like wiggle.
Feels
but he would have to wear it. Yeah, it's liberating.
Did you wear them when you played? You had to wear them when
I had
played.
When I played. Yeah. But when I got older, I just stopped wearing them. Sweaty feet. Sweaty feet.
It's about the blisters for me. Like,
no blisters.
My feet get cooked if I don't wear socks, man.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine a life without socks. I'm actually just kind of envious of Hugh that he could live life without socks.
Just imagine life without socks and drawers. It's liberating.
Liberating. Hold on.
Sitting over there without drawers on?
Oh, every day. Breathing.
No.
Just breathing. Every day. Mm-hmm. Every day.
All right. We go from no draws Douglas to Aaron in San Diego. Aaron?
Good effing afternoon, Philadelphia.
All right, Aaron.
And we're trying to move past that, Aaron. It always takes Aaron to point out the stuff that we're trying to, like...
Elephant in the room. Yeah,
I've tried to tell you Aaron is the worst.
Oh, dude.
I've tried to tell you.
And I am sure Blue Jeans Larkin and the Odyssey upper management is listening. Okay? I'm going to tell you one thing, ladies and gentlemen. Hugh Douglas, Joe Giglio, and Kyle Quinn have the best freaking show on radio. You guys, Hugh Douglas, you are absolutely positively cooking with high quality, thick cut bacon grease.
Aaron, you ain't helping my calls out right now, bro.
How about we call it this? The most unpredictable audio you'll ever hear. The Midday Show. Aaron, what do you got on the Phillies?
God help us.
Well, I actually, and it's the Jalen Hurts thing is it's tiring, dude. But, you know, you brought up a couple points earlier, and you brought up Troy Aikman, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that previously you have brought up Dan Marino, and you've compared the two.
Right, yeah.
So I'm going to ask you the question, Joe Giglio.
Okay.
Who is a better quarterback, Dan Marino or Troy Aikman?
Dan Marino.
Okay, so now, if you pulled Troy Aikman into an office and said, Troy, you can switch places and have the career that Dan Marino had, do you think that he would take that in at any point?
Sure, he might. I mean, I don't know what he...
I don't know.
Well, the outcome for both of them is the same, though. So, but I think he's talking about the Super Bowl. Yeah. He's talking about the Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, he's a Super Bowl champion.
Well, but A.J. Brown because he didn't care about the Super Bowl. How do you know what anyone cares about?
So I'll answer your questions. My instinct would be that he would want to win. So I'll go along. I'll answer your question. I'll say, yeah, he'd switch. Aaron, but let me ask you a question. If you asked Dan Marino, who's a better player, you or Troy Aikman, do you think he would say Troy Aikman?
I am not done.
Cook him, Aaron. Cook
him. Now, if you pull Dan Marino mm-hmm. into an office... and you asked him, would he rather trade spots with Troy Aikman and have Troy Aikman's career as opposed to his career? At this stage in his life, I guarantee you that he would switch in a heartbeat because the Super Bowls are so important to quarterbacks. Stats are just a secondary thing. Now, Dan Marino may have been the better quarterback, but another perspective on it is that Dan Marino's ego got the better of him, and he was unwilling to sacrifice stats for the betterment of the team, and he wanted to throw the ball all over the field, and come playoff time in cold weather, throwing the ball is not as effective as running the ball, and that's why he never won a Super Bowl.
We're blaming Dan Marino for him not winning? It's Dan Marino's fault that the Dolphins
didn't win? But you don't understand. The words that you and Kyle put out on the airways is kind of like saying Joe Montana isn't a Super Bowl champion. The 49ers are a Super Bowl champion, you know, or Joe Montana, you know, he earned his Hall of Fame career by throwing 5-yard outs or 10-yard slants to Jonathan Taylor and Jerry Rice.
Joe Montana won MVPs of the league. He didn't just win Super Bowls. He was voted the best player in the league.
Jalen Hurts was in the running for NFL MVP multiple seasons.
Well,
okay?
No, once.
And he was a
once.
Super Bowl MVP.
He received once.
Here's the problem.
He received votes one time for the MVP award, one single season, 2022. Stop. We can't just make things up. Just because FanDuel put out odds in November, that's not in the running. In the running is votes. Jalen got votes one time. He was awesome. I say this all the time. I thought he was amazing in 2022. I would have given him the MVP of the league. MVP of the NFL. I thought he was that good. I thought before he got hurt, he was the best player in pro football. But that hasn't happened since then. I don't get the Marino thing. Marino is a better player than Troy Aikman.
He's talking about the accomplishments and everything, because at some point, and I know, you know, Kyle talked about how AJ left a Super Bowl winning team. For some people, winning the Super Bowl was more coveted than having major stats. And I think that's where I come down with it when it comes to him, because you have a lot of quarterbacks that are more stat chasers than anything. And Jalen's not your traditional quarterback. He's not. And this year, like we've been talking about, he has to play better, because the Eagles want, when you talk about the money that they've doled out to the receivers and the running back and everything, they want better play from that position.
Sure.
But the first 5 years of Jalen's career were phenomenal.
Yeah, very good.
And the fact that, you know, he has been able to accomplish so much in a short period of time, that's what it's talking about, and doing it his way. You know, that's the biggest thing.
I actually think we don't talk enough about Jalen's performance and where he ranks in touchdowns and yards and that. I think we diminish it by just making about wins and losses. Jalen has done a lot in five seasons. I agree with you, right? I mean, he probably has in his first 5 or 6 years. I would think he might be top 10 all time in touchdowns if you include rushing and passing. I think so. We don't talk enough about that. We talk all about the winning. I just look at it as quarterback wins, not just a quarterback stat. 215-592-9494. The world's biggest soccer tournament has arrived, and you can trade the entire tournament on CalStreet. CalStreet can trade every match from the opening stage all the way to the final. We have ourselves a game here tonight, by the way, here in Philadelphia. I think the whole World Cup has been awesome so far. Can't wait to watch tonight, the game here in Philadelphia, and everything moving forward in the World Cup. Right now, if you look at the futures on Kalshi, France, they're up to 9. They're trading at 19% now to win it all, which means a $100 trade on France will pay out $495.50. That's where my money is. On Kalshi, you're trading against peers in a live market, meaning there's no house, and as the probability changes, you can buy in and out of your position for a limited time. Download the Kalshi app. Use code GIGLIO to get $10 when you trade 10. KALSHI, Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game.